This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
Welcome in, everybody, to the Landry Football Podcast for this Thursday, May 7th. Man, it's hard to believe the week has gone by pretty fast, and the early part of May has gone by pretty fast. And it's interesting as we are all in the process of watching day by day what's going on around the country and which state's opening up, how safe is it, how safe are we going to be, and we're getting closer and closer to it affecting the football season. I have mentioned more than a few occasions that football's been very fortunate. While basketball and baseball season's been interrupted, I mean, hockey and basketball are probably have their season derailed, and we'll see if they can. Basketball, it looks like they're trying to, NBA's trying to figure out how they can somehow finish up a season. But, you know, in other sports as well, NASCAR and golf trying to come back and tennis trying to figure out the rest of their schedule. Everybody's been interrupted. Football has not been interrupted for the most important stuff. Look, spring practice is important. OTAs are important. Workouts prior to the draft are important. It's not critical. It didn't prevent us from having the draft, having free agency. And lack of OTAs is not going to prevent us from having a season. But now we're at the point where the off season is getting shorter and shorter. We're at May. Always looked at May after the draft as a time. Ironically, this is the month that Canadian Football League training camps start up, and it's a big mini camp month, rookie mini camps in particular in the NFL. That's not taking place, and it doesn't look like anything's going to happen even in June, although we'll see. The latest from around the league is that everyone is trying to figure out state by state where we are in terms of being able to open up. And when every facility in the NFL can be opened up, then that's when they're going to allow everyone to go. So if you got one or two states left behind, they're not going to allow everybody else to get gone from a competitive advantage standpoint. So that is where things are, and we could see some potential opportunities for some OTAs in June. We'd have to see some adjustments to the schedule, but this is an abnormal time, so there would be. But we shall see, and there is releases. We are dropping this podcast today. You probably know, as everyone is making a bigger deal out of it than it normally is, the NFL is announcing their schedule today. And in the midst of three-hour telecast to announce a schedule, you know we're hard up for sports, any sports, the sign of sports, the smell of sports. I guess they're going to squeeze in the televised portion of the scheduled announcements in between Korean baseball games. But that's where we're at right now. And so the schedule announcement is going to take place. Now, a couple of things I'm looking forward to is how would they deal with the first four games? I've recommended, not that anybody's listening to me, but the football people anyway, I've mentioned why wouldn't the league just schedule the first four games of the season against conference opponents, against the other conference opponents. As you know, every team plays a division in the other conference. It would make the most sense to just schedule the first four games against those opponents. That way, if you had to chop off any part of the schedule, just chop off the first four, or within either the first one, two, three, or four, because those games would be the least important of determining who the best teams are in each conference come playoff time. I've not gotten indication that they're going to do that. I don't know. We'll find out. It doesn't appear like they will. But I am told there's going to be greater flexibility, meaning don't know that they're going to discuss it a great deal, but they are willing to adjust and make changes to the schedule depending on how the whole situation resolves with going back to normal societal setups. So right now the feeling is, and I've mentioned this a couple of times, that October 15th, they feel, is sort of the deadline date for getting the season started and still getting all the games in. It would require no bye weeks, which would be tough, but it would. That's the plan, at least, to drop that date. And it would push the start of, the end of the season later, but that's part of kind of where we're at with that. If they had to, they would be willing to reduce the schedule, but that's the last resort. The plan is, you know, as best they can, and again, they've got several plans within the league, is to try to go forward with it, including making adjustments to the schedule that would allow for playing Saturday games and even having triple header games on television in the event that college football were to be a no-go for some reason. So that is the latest. So we'll find out that, and I'm sure everyone's going to be excited. The biggest thing, though, is not who you're going to play, but if we're going to play, and it looks like the NFL is certainly the most determined of anyone that they're going to play. They're not giving any indication, but I'm going to say this, that, and I don't want this to be taken anything differently other than what it is. If you listen to the statements, of course, everyone is preparing to play and they fully anticipate playing. Everybody's saying those statements, but nobody has the authority, even in, you know, pro football commissioner, to say, we are definitely playing, doesn't matter what happens. No one can do that. So I think people are taking a little bit too literal, and I think we need to hope, first of all, for good results in our regular daily lives, that we can go forward with having some sense of normalcy that would include football. But I think the league is going to do everything they can, up and including to the possibility of quarantining a team all season long if it had to. And that would be something that the Players Association, the owners, and of course, and the TV networks would have to agree to. And they, ideally, I think, would not want to go that direction, but I think that would make a lot of sense to secure a season if they had to sequester a team for at least the start or part or even all of the season. I think they'd be open to looking at that possibility. But we've got a lot of things to learn that are above and beyond whether the football season takes place that's going to determine and filter down on whether we're going to have football on time and not. We are got a few questions we're going to get to today that's going to cover a few topics. Got a question about breakout players in college football and a couple of other things. But I wanted to kind of look at what's going on around the league post-draft. As everybody has officially signed their undrafted free agents, and the signing of the draft picks are going to be, you know, filtering in, and you can follow it up on LandryFootball.com, all the latest. That's not going to be real newsworthy because it's inevitable that since the last CBA that players holding out, draft picks holding out, are not a thing and haven't been a thing for a while. Just officially signing is important, and it doesn't impede them from going to any sorts of workouts, which, again, we're not having. But what's being done right now is obviously some virtual teaching, which is the process of sending players information, video, having meetings to be able to explain like you were in a classroom setting. Players are given their workout regimen to try to, you know, get their target weight and to do certain things from a cardiovascular or condition standpoint. But there's some obstacles with that. You don't have a chance unless you were able to meet the strength coach at the combine to really know to get a good physical look. But there are other things. There are pictures that we take, you may be familiar with, of a player's body type. So the strength coaches and trainers will look at that and look at the numbers, the body fat percentages, all those things that we calculate and take into account at the combine to kind of help players in lieu of being able to come in and get workouts and be a part of that. They've got to do all that individually and get ready. And quite frankly, the coaches are checking in with their position groups on a regular basis and having some meetings, just checking in with them personally. You know, obviously, they're scattered around the country, so checking in to see how their families are doing and the health and any issues, any symptoms, anything going on in your family, there's close, you know, scrutiny on that in that regard. And then there's obviously the get ready for at a very quick notice when we open up the facility and we can travel and this is how we're going to do it. This is where we're going to go. But behind the scenes, there's a lot of planning, a lot of contingency planning, and a lot of contingencies to the contingencies. How do you deal with it? Certainly putting up players at a hotel and sequestering them is something that's going to be is being studied, looked at. How do we sanitize even more so our training facility? Who can come in? Who's essential? Do you keep non-football people out of your building? And what type of a building do you have? Some facilities just have football people in it, and like ticket people and all are in maybe like the stadium or some other place. But if you got everybody in the building, do you make, you know, do you have others that are non-essential football people just do their work from home or at a satellite location to stay away from players, to just reduce the amount of outside people that are making contact with players? What do we need to do with the media? Perhaps not have the media anywhere around the players and maybe do that virtually. All those things are being discussed from a league standpoint, and then obviously the teams are having to figure out the best way to go about making that happen. But the difficulty is we're going through the different scenarios, but nobody can do anything. Everybody has questions and nobody has answers. They're just looking at it. But what I can say from the NFL side is there's really good organization, really good planning taking place, and we're just going to have to see how it plays out. On the college side, the unique thing that's happened during this shutdown is the increase in the flow of the recruiting process. So obviously, you all know by now that early signing day is in December. That's actually the biggest signing day. April 15th, last couple of weeks, all the way through the next couple of weeks, is a big evaluation period around the country that coaches this year can't go and evaluate. So what has happened for quite some time is a lot of virtual discussions with players. We're finding that recruits themselves are making quicker decisions on where they want to go to school, figuring we're not going to be able to, we're pretty much limited to where we can travel. And do we really want to go travel in July and August, even if they open it up? Do we really want to do that? Or do just we want to, particularly if you've already seen some of these schools, do you have a good feel for it from a safety standpoint? Just go ahead and, you know, announce who your final three is or tell the coaches. And we got a lot of kids that are recruiting that are committing right now at a higher rate than we've seen in the past few years. The process, again, is two ways for the player standpoint. From a coaching standpoint, coaches are spending a lot more time looking at tape of recruits and getting more done, looking at tape at home because they have more time to do it, as opposed to on the road where you might be able to get to three or four schools a day. Now you can maybe look at, you know, 8 or 10 players a day and make some calls, and you can get a lot more done when it's just as simple as hanging it up and talking to the next one. And so that process is really sped up. And the other thing is what limitations that they have now on virtual teaching. You can do some of that, and that's being done by position coaches as well. Most people are having their daily meetings virtually with somebody with you know, from from their homes, and they go in and do their work and they reconvene. It's been an interesting process. I think a lot of folks have learned that, you know, there are different ways to do things. It's not ideal. Having people in the office every day is something that that everyone misses, but it's a necessary part. We have been telling you about our great friends at Skylight, and folks, it is getting close to time. Yes, May is not only here, but we're just moseying on through it. Already May 7th, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and it's so difficult to find that perfect Mother's Day gift. Doesn't have to be for your mom. For like myself, who I lost my mother, could be for an aunt, a sister. It could be for a grandmother. It could be for anyone. Finding that perfect gift is always a challenge. And, you know, a lot of people are not able to visit their mom or dad or grandparents as often as they like, which is why we recommend Skylight Frame. It's a touch screen photo frame you can email photos to, and they appear in seconds. So they can get to see your favorite moments. It's easy to set up for them. Receiving the first photo is going to be a wow moment. Now the whole family can send photos to their frame. So if you live far away, it could be a struggle to stay connected. We get all that. But after they get the Skylight Frame, just send new photos to it almost every day. It's really easy to see what they're up to, and they can see what you're up to in the entire family. So easy to stay connected. So nowadays, staying in touch with those loved ones are more important than ever in today's current environment. And you can't do it personally as often as you'd like. The easiest way to do it is with Skylight, a photo frame you can email photos to anytime from anywhere. A great way to feel close to those you love even when you're separated. Multiple people can send photos to the frame, so it's a great way to keep a large network of friends and families in touch. It sets up effortlessly in under 60 seconds. Just plug it in, use the touchscreen to connect to your wireless network, and enjoy. Sending photos to Skylight is effortless. Everyone in your family can just email photos to Mom Skylight, and they'll pop up in her home in seconds. It has a black frame, so it looks like a real photo frame that adds a beautiful touch to your home. It's a gorgeous 10-touch screen. You can swipe through photos with your finger and even tap to thank the person who sent a photo. 100% satisfaction guaranteed. If you don't love your Skylight, they'll offer you a full refund. You can preload it with your favorite photos for a special Mother's Day gift. And then you can tap the heart button, and it will let the sender know that you love the photo. Makes the frame fun and interactive to use. Now, as a special holiday gift offer, you get $10 off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/football and enter code football. That's right. To get $10 off your purchase of a Skylight Frame, just go to skylightframe.com/football and enter code football. That's skylightframe.com/football. The next phase is trying to figure out on the college side what campuses are going to open up. Most campuses are saying that we're going to have the summer semester online. Some are opening up. What you're hearing again is a lot of conversation from administrators, college administrators, since we fully expect to be open in the fall and have students on campus. But again, if you listen to the caveats to the statement, or what they don't say is they're not definitively saying it. And I think people are hoping that those statements are definitive, that students are coming, football's definitely on. Nothing's definitely on. They're making the statements because they want students to send in their deposits. You know, they don't want a flurry of students to say, you know what, or their parents to say, you know what, let's just hold off sending the deposit. Maybe, you know, maybe we'll do something else, and maybe we'll do some online classes. No, what they want is students to send in their deposits and have a belief, or lead them to believe, that everything's going to be fine in the fall, which A, it might be. B, if it's not, then they can say, look, it was our full intention to do that, but this has happened. Now they've got their deposits. It's a little bit easier to transition them to online classes at that point, with the idea that, hey, we'll get back to on-campus classes once we're able to do that. And I think, again, universities are looking at, all right, what do we need to do? Do we need to have more sections of classes? So if you've got a class that has 300 people in it in a big auditorium, do you have that same class in different sections where maybe only 50 people are in it, and you've got, five or six sessions? Can you do that and spread them out? Well, all of that is important because it's, I think, going to be highly influential on whether players can come back to campus. And remember, football players normally come back to campus before students do in the fall because they get together for 2 days. So I think that's going to happen. But the process of having games without fans is a little bit trickier in college, not just because of the college atmosphere. We know it's going to look weird if you don't have people in the stadium and whatnot. I get all of that. But it's going to be a tough sell to say, student athlete, he can go play football, but he can't go to class on campus. That is what they're grappling with right now. And how do they do that? And then there's the other thought of, well, each conference is going to do what's best for them. Well, of course, each conference is going to do what's best for them. That's college football in a nutshell. Don't let anybody fool you or tell you otherwise, that having anything other than all of college football open delegitimizes the season to a certain degree. It could affect some games. It's certainly going to affect, obviously, even if you've got a conference or schools that maybe are not real contenders, it's still having everybody available to play is the only real way to have a legitimate season. With that said, there's so much money involved that I do think there are precautions being made. There are contingency plans being made to see if there is a way we could pull it off under these circumstances. The biggest concern going on is not so much the start of the season, which is a concern, but staying through the football season, staying dealing with players that get the virus, and how do you deal with it? How do you control it? Well, as I've said many times, I think it's going to mirror what we're doing in society on a regular basis. So how that's going to play out is going to be quite interesting to see. So that's the latest on that. Couple of notes. I have, now that we've put the draft to bed, I've got an early look on LandryFootball.com of the 2021 NFL draft board checklist. Too many names. Not going to run over all the names, but there's some obviously intriguing guys that you're going to know a lot about. Some you're not going to know as much about. Going to be interesting to see. Obviously, the quarterback race is going to be Trevor Lawrence. But I think Penei Sewell of Oregon, you're going to hear the big offensive tackles named in the top five. Ironically, Alabama has two elite receivers again and an elite corner again. They'll have five guys minimum drafted in the first round. LSU has a great receiver that's going to go high as well. Clemson has a running back that's very good, and a receiver that's very good that's going to go high. ATN and Ross It's going to be a really, really interesting group. Florida State has a great defensive tackle in Marvin Wilson. And Gregory Rousseau, the defensive end from Miami, is very underrated. So it's an interesting group. Got some good tackles. Got some edge rushers. Interesting group to be able to look at and see kind of where things will play out. In terms of top college players returning next year, people are already getting a little bit antsy to figure out who some of the top players are going to be, just as college players. Well, we've got a complete list over at LandryFootball.com as well on that, but I want to get to some guys. You know about Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields at quarterback, but keep an eye out on De'Arik King of Miami, Jamie Newman at Georgia, two transfer quarterbacks. Tanner Morgan of Minnesota is an intriguing quarterback. Keaton Slovis, of course, you're familiar with at USC. Brock Purdy of Iowa State. Shane Buechel of SMU is an intriguing guy. At running back, you know about Travis Etienne and Najee Harris of Alabama. Excuse me. But Judah Hubbard of Oklahoma State. Maybe as good a running back as there is in the country returning. Kenneth Gainwell of Memphis is outstanding. Kylan Hill of Mississippi State. Very curious to see how Mike Leach is going to utilize him in that offense. How about Jarrett Patterson? Maybe don't know about him. Buffalo. Yes, University of Buffalo running backs. Very, very good. Receivers, you know about Jamar Chase and Jalen Waddle. Have you forgotten about Rondale Moore of Purdue? Yes, believe it or not, he's going to be 3 years out of high school next year. He is got the all-around versatility and playmaking skills. Could be this year's Brandon Ayuk. How about Chidarius, or as we call him, Tutu Atwell of Louisville? Very underrated player. Miami native that is, I think, poised to have a really good good season. And Tylan Wallace, the Oklahoma State receiver. Rashad Bateman, the Minnesota receiver, another one returning there. And then besides the offensive line group headed by Penei Sewell of Oregon, Samuel Cosmi of Texas, Trey Smith of Tennessee, yes, they're going to have a high pick. Cole Van Lanten, the tackle from Wisconsin, Creed Humphrey, the center of Oklahoma, and Wyatt Davis, probably the best guard in the country out of Ohio State. Some other guys on the offensive side that I think are real intriguing. Jaden Daniels, coming back for Arizona State, young quarterback that's outstanding. A couple of tight ends, Pat Freiermuth of Penn State, Kyle Pitts of Florida. Real intriguing players. Defensively, talked a little bit about Gregory Rousseau and Marvin Wilson, but Kayvon Thibodeau's coming back for his second year at Oregon. Carlos Basham at Wake Forest. Chris Rump at Duke. ACC's got some really good defensive linemen. Jalen Twyman, defensive tackle at Pitt. And Quincy Roche of Miami. So some really good defensive front players. At linebackers, Michael Parsons, Penn State. Dylan Moses of Alabama, of course. But Hamakar Rashid from Oregon State is one of the better players you probably have never heard of. Nick Bolton of Missouri is outstanding. In the secondary, Alabama, again, has got another good one in Patrick Surtain. And Ohio State has another elite corner in Sean Wade. And Georgia has Richard LeConte, the safety, that's really good. Trevon Morig, the safety from TCU, is outstanding. Caleb Farley from Virginia Tech is a really good corner, as is Elijah Molden of Washington. So some really good players. Sean Jolly, a corner from Appalachian State. Carlton Marshall, linebacker from Troy. Jordan Smith, an outside backer from Alabama, Birmingham. Some other guys that I think will be intriguing guys. So, got a question here. I think it's Paul asked about who are some breakout players this year in college football. And I kind of look at these guys are guys that maybe are good players, but maybe due to who they're playing behind or have been played behind, they're maybe are going to kind of break out. a guy like a David Bailey of Boston College replacing A.J. Dillon. Big Cat Bryant, Derek Hall, a defensive lineman at Auburn, are coming in to replace Davidson and Derek Brown. Noah Burks of Wisconsin replacing Zach Bond and Chris Orr. Jerrion Ealy, a big-time running back with a lot of speed in Lane Kiffin's offense at Ole Miss. Kareer Elam, the cornerback at Florida, is a really good player by replacing Henderson. You know, a couple of good receivers, quite frankly, the three good receivers at USC, Kyle Ford and Drake London and Brew McCoy. Travis Ford, the defensive end at Oklahoma State's a really good one. I think Tyler Goodson could break out a little bit at running back at Iowa. Eric Gray, same thing, running back at Tennessee. Zach Harrison, not going to be Chase Young, but going to be a really good defensive end for the Buckeyes, as is Kyle Hamilton, the safety from Notre Dame. Sam Hartman of Wake Forest is an intriguing guy to Jamie Newman off the Georgia. He's a really good talented with good passing skills. I think Cincinnati's one of the more underrated teams in the country. James Hudson, the offensive lineman, is one of the reasons why up front they can be pretty good. I think Dante Lucas, and a bright spot on the Seminoles' offensive line, is a guy to look out for, too, and some others. We're not going to get into everyone. Certainly we've got a lot of that for you over at LandryFootball.com. Larry asked a question about late-round guys in the NFL draft. Late-round picks that might have an impact. I would say guys like Curtis Weaver of Miami with the Dolphins out of Boise State, a really good player. Tyler Johnson, who I think's a really good receiver out of Minnesota that the Buccaneers picked up. Juwan Jennings, I think, is absolutely at his size can be a really good player in that Kyle Shanahan offense, that the physical post-up position. Those are guys that stand out. I think Donovan Peoples-Jones is a better athlete, went a little bit later. He's with the Cleveland Browns. Bryce Hall from Virginia, I think, is a really good player and a guy that a good zone corner that I think can be real effective in that role. Those are some guys that I think really jump out and I think going to have a really good chance of maybe making a team, even though they're a late-round pick. Also got a question here from Lance that asks about Pittsburgh's poor depth at quarterback behind Ben Roethlisberger. He referred to Duck Hodges and Mason Rudolph and their play last year. He mentioned that that the Steelers traded Josh Dobbs to the Jags. I saw him play at Tennessee. Decent arm strength and mobility. Do you know why they jettisoned him? Yes. Not a really good passer. Good arm strength and can run, but not very accurate. Not very good processor. There's a reason why Rudolph and Duck Hodges made it over him, is that they were actually a little bit better in those areas, and those are key. It wasn't a cap situation with a guy that young. You asked if it was a cap situation. No. Rudolph was certainly a better player in terms of a processor and accurately throwing the football. Not good enough, but just better. And certainly Josh is not on his way to do anything in Jacksonville. So, again, a lot more to it than arm strength and mobility. And how a guy may look to in a general sense. But when you study and break down tape and understand where he's supposed to go with the football, he really struggled in that area. So that was the reason why they made that move. But, you know, I do think that they've got themselves in a precarious situation in Pittsburgh. If Ben goes down again, it has been a problem. And hopefully for them it doesn't continue to be. And then Kevin in response to discussion I had a couple of weeks ago about the name, image, and likeness proposal in college football, he says he refers to he could see a problem with political networks meaning a group of donors and boosters could coordinate and make sure every player in a college roster gets some form of compensation, be it meaningless speeches, stage signing sessions, or other activities that are only designed to legally transfer money to players. Assuming that these type of networks take hold, isn't there a decent possibility that we could see significant changes to the haves and have-not list? For some odd reason, the entire list of Texas are flashing through the line. Well, we already have haves and have-nots, and it's about as drastic as can be. In theory, they're not going to be able to give meaningless speeches and get paid a lot of money for it. It's going to have to be the going rate. Now, as I've addressed before, Kevin, who's going to monitor that? Obviously, it's going to have to be reported, and you know, this is certainly opening up a can of worms. And you know, certainly, I've thought that you can have guys give a speech, and it is a way now to bring money into a player's hands that, you know, before, if it happened, well, why is that? It can't happen. Now it can be, well, he made an appearance, and here's the document that he was there, and here are the people that were there, you know, and so there's legitimacy to it, but it can't be accordingly to what they're saying. It can't be a $10,000 payment for a one-hour, you know, gathering of a speech. That is going to be interesting to try to take command over, because there's some people that get $10,000 for a speech. Is it a college player? No, shouldn't be. How's that going to be legislated? So it's a fair point. You're going down the right path of opening up a Pandora's box. I'm just telling you what they're trying to do. It's certainly an avenue to do just that. But I don't know about the Texas schools, or I mean, the Texas schools still do a lot of that. I mean, you know, in terms of they can do what they want to do, and they've been able to do it, but it hasn't. Is it going to be a drastic change? No, not if most people can do it. It's still going to be, you know, maybe a further separation, which already is a chalk sport. What sport is more chalky than college football? I mean, there's only, you know, and you can check this out on LandryFootball.com. I've given you the grades of the teams. There are very few teams that have even a shot at winning a national championship. I think there are three teams that could win a national championship legitimately this year, and there's three to four others that have a shot at getting into the playoffs, and who knows if things break right, could be that. Outside of a six or seven, and that's stretching it, each and every year, you don't have any more than that. You don't. So it's as chalky as it can get. Could it get more chalky? I don't know if they can get much more chalky than that. I mean, it might mean if somebody can legally, you know, spend some money, maybe it takes another program and puts it a little bit more in that stage. I don't know where it's going to go with it, but I do think it does open up a can of worms. So those are good thoughts there. Folks, hey, we really appreciate you joining us. And again, if you've got any questions, send it to me at contactchris@LandryFootball.com, and we will address it. Again, a reminder, take advantage of our scouting season offer at LandryFootball.com. We are working on a number of things. We're breaking down college rosters right now. Breaking down recruiting state by state with recruiting boards, breaking down NFL rosters right now. Got the draft board watch list for 2021. So we've got our daily notebooks each and every day, what's going on around the world of college football and the NFL. So check it out today. Take advantage of our scouting season offer. It's the best one we've ever had. And for less than $5 a month, you can get a peek behind the curtain and a look inside the world of college football and the NFL. Appreciate you joining us. Join us again next week for another edition of the Landry Football Podcast, part of LandryFootball.com.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
This is an MMA report with Jason Floyd and Daniel Galvan Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
I firmly believe that the UFC in the state of Florida is going to do everything possible to make sure that the fighters and cornermen and everyone working, you know, these upcoming events in Jacksonville, we put in a safe environment. Because look, if something bad were to happen, I don't know how this sport could recover. Some of the things I've seen over the past couple of days, Daniel, there's part of me that goes, man, are there people rooting for the UFC to not succeed here?
That, I mean, look, it's a very tough thing to project on someone without them saying that. But certainly, I would imagine there are people who see the UFC kind of running in the face of advice from medical officials, especially in the early going, and being like, they probably would like to see the comeuppance for the UFC. But I don't know if that's super pronounced, because it's kind of a messed up thing to wish on someone, right? Like to wish on, because those are real human beings that will get the disease. But it's a very tough thing to balance, because like in one perspective, you want to be positive and you want to be like, all right, they put together a safe event. But on the other hand, even if they do pull off everything going according to plan, it's very much like the way I would look at like Moneyball with the Oakland Athletics, for example, is that they put themselves in the, basically the result doesn't justify the process is what I'm getting at here, in terms of like so many times this result will happen, but the question is, was it the right process? And for the UFC, I think there are some serious questions about whether it's not the right process. And the big reason why is that mixed martial arts isn't essential business. It's not that. It's a sport. So that's why I hesitate to like overly applaud the UFC for putting together this event, because the other thing I kind of disagree with is I don't think they're doing everything in their power. I think they're doing a whole lot in their power.
The MMA Report with Jason Floyd and Daniel Galvan can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.